This is Sid Roth saying, I have a vision. Now is the set time to blow the trumpet in Zion.
Blow a trumpet in Zion, sound it on the mountains. Blow a trumpet in Zion, for the day of the Lord is come.
Shalom, Mishpucha. Shalom, family. Mishpucha is a Hebrew word. It means family. And we're the Mishpucha, the family with a Jewish heart, made up of Jewish and non-Jewish people that are one new man in Messiah Yeshua, Messiah Jesus. Getting ready, Mishpucha, to blow the grandest shofar, all the grandest trumpet in Zion. We want everyone, everywhere, to hear the good news. We want everyone, everywhere, to be red hot for the Messiah. My guest by way of telephone, I'm speaking to him at his home outside of Akron, Ohio, is Rick Neal. We're interviewing him on his brand new book, literally just off the press, Ultimate Glory. And the thing that excites me about this book, Mishpucha, is there have been many scenarios on how the end time events will be. But you know, none of these scenarios are really and truly based on the Old Covenant festivals. And as I explained on yesterday's broadcast, God himself tells us that these festivals, or the Hebrew word is these God appointments, are holy convocations. And in the Hebrew, holy convocation means rehearsals. So God is already telling us, if you'd like to know how the play ends, look at the rehearsal. And most Christians don't have a clue about their Hebraic roots because they were stolen and replaced with Greco-Roman roots. And that's why there's so much confusion and so much controversy in the last days. But God doesn't want it to be a mystery to his children. And so on yesterday's broadcast, we found out that the feasts are divided into two seasons, so to speak. There's the spring feasts, which were perfect shadows of the first coming of the Messiah. And then there are the fall feasts, which, again, are perfect shadows of the return of the Messiah. Now, one of the things that got Rick really thinking along these lines has to do with the understanding of a wedding. A wedding, a Jewish wedding in the East, is so different than what we have as weddings, even Jewish weddings or all kinds of weddings here in the West. So when we look at the parables of the Messiah, the people, when he said that, they knew in cultural context what he was talking about. But today, we put his words in our 21st century Western cultural context and get the wrong conclusions. So let's start at the beginning again to understand what a Jewish wedding was like in the times that Jesus wrote all of these parables about the last days. Rick?
The things the Lord really used to get me started down this line, there was something he stirred on the inside of me about the word mansion. And what it turned out to be was that we understand in the West the word mansion to mean like a 23-room estate with manicured gardens. But the Hebrew word for mansion really is more of an intimate place for the bride and the groom, a bridal chamber. And once he started me down that line of thinking, he began to show me other things. And how it works out is that with the wedding, the way it is biblically, the bridegroom would come and propose a wedding covenant for the bride. And he would come and he would set a goblet or a glass of wine before the bride and before the bride's father. And he would propose a marriage covenant. And he would, in that covenant, state what he would be willing to pay for the hand of his bride. So the father would look over the covenant and it would be presented to the young lady, and oftentimes the young lady would be making her decision on whether or not to marry this bridegroom without even having ever seen him. But the proposal of marriage would be made, and if she would receive the proposal, if she said yes, she would drink from the cup. And at the drinking of the cup they were considered betrothed. That doesn't really mean engaged the way we think of it. What it means is that they were married, but they were not to be together yet. They were husband and wife at that point, but they couldn't be intimate yet. Because at that point, when she said yes by taking and drinking of the cup, the bridegroom was told that she had accepted his offer, and he would go home to his father's house, and he would begin to prepare the mansion, the bridal suite. And it would be the father's decision, not the son's decision, as to when the bridal suite was finished. The son would work on the bridal suite. When it was finally finished, the father would give the okay to the son to go and sweep away his bride, to go in the middle of the night and to take her away, to catch her away. Well, while this building was taking place of the mansion, the bride would keep herself pure. Once she drank of that cup, there was a veil to be worn over her face. And from that day on, that veil spoke of the fact that she is separate. She is to be separate unto her bridegroom, that she is spoken for, that the price has been paid for her, and that she is already spoken for. So she would each night go to bed and take her lamp with her, because she didn't know what night the bridegroom would be coming for her. And she would take the oil, and she would take the lamp. So then when the building was finished and the bridegroom did come, that the best man would come with the bridegroom, and with a shout, he would awaken the bride and take away the bride, and they would be whisked back to the bridal chamber or the mansion where the marriage would be consummated at that point.
And the thing that's so amazing in our understanding is here in the West, we combine the wedding ceremony and the wedding feast. But how was it in biblical days?
The wedding ceremony itself, Kate, wasn't going to happen until after the marriage was consummated, because as they came back to the marriage, but the mansion, when they came there, the best man would wait outside the door where the marriage was consummated, and then once the marriage was consummated, the sheet that had blood on it from the first time that they made love would be shown as a sign of virginity, a sign of purity, which means that the wedding would proceed. Because at that point, if the bride herself was not a virgin, she was eligible to be stoned. And that's in Deuteronomy 22. That's one of the ones that really got me started down this line, was that the whole idea of the wedding, the first emphasis is of the catching away, or the surprise taking away by the bridegroom, then this next emphasis is on purity. That if the bride who the bridegroom comes for had not kept herself pure, that she would be cut off at that point.
How does this pan out with the current thinking of say a little prayer with Billy, live like the world, and when you die, you have a life insurance policy to go to heaven? Once you say that prayer, no one can ever take your life insurance policy to heaven away.
The key to salvation is lordship. It's relationship with Jesus. In Matthew 7, Jesus said, "Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven." And we can also see this in how Jesus addresses the seven churches in Revelation, where he talks about, "I know your works." And the whole emphasis on Passover and the early feast days was on faith, that we get into the kingdom by faith. But now our lifestyle, once we enter by faith, okay, must be a lifestyle of faithfulness, that the Lord has called us to follow his lordship, that we can't call him Lord and ignore his dictates to our lives, that he has a specific destiny birthed in every one of us, that we have a specific target, a specific destiny that we each are to fulfill for our Lord. And as he walks us down there, it's the works, it's the obedience, it's doing what the Lord says that keeps us in fellowship with him, and we can't ignore Jesus and call him Lord.
And the message I've been getting is, the prophetic word I've been getting is, it's time for separation. What would that mean to you?
To me, that is to lay down anything that's coming between Jesus and me. It doesn't have to be black, backsliding sin. It can be, in my case, my personal case, sports had become an idol in my life.
Now, if sports was not an idol, he wouldn't tell you to lay it down.
No, there's nothing sinful about watching a football game. But where the problem comes in is when I let that become too big a part of my life. When I spend more time investing my time in football than I do in reading the Word, in fellowshipping with the Lord, in interceding for his people. When I let things become more important than Jesus, then that's when he will come and tell us to separate, that those things are sucking life. He has an awesome destiny set before me for my life, and he has an awesome destiny set before you for your life. But there are also booby traps that the enemy tries to get in there to get us off track, to suck that life of God out of us to where we will be spending our energy and our resources in wrong areas.
You know, when I read your book, Ultimate Glory, and read what the shadows of the fall feast show, I think it would cause someone to be very nervous if they understood what's going to happen on the Day of Atonement.
I agree. Those who have a very shallow relationship with the Lord, or those who just believe that they have to say a prayer and they'll go to heaven when they die, that these feast days, these fall feast days, are really going to shake them up. But on the other hand, those who have a heart to really serve the Lord, those who have really made Jesus Christ their Lord, those who really want to fulfill their destiny, those who want to walk in godliness, those who want to fulfill everything that the Lord has predestined for them, these fall feast days will birth such hope in their hearts. That's what it's done in me.
And I'll just give our Mishpocha a little clue. We're about ready to walk into the greatest revival the world has ever seen. The question is not whether we're going to walk into it or not. The question is, are you going to walk into it? I urge you to get Rick Neal's brand new book, Ultimate Glory. We're asking $13 postage paid, and you'll see that, I mean, how would you like to see the rehearsal of the final act of God's final play? It's all spelled out in these biblical festivals. Call or write today for Ultimate Glory. $13 postage paid. If you would like to receive a complimentary copy of our bi-monthly teaching newsletter, materials catalog, or information about becoming Mishpocha, write to me, Sid Roth, Post Office Box 1918, Brunswick, Georgia, 31521. Or call our order-only line, 1-800-548-1918. To place a credit card order, call anytime the same number, 1-800-548-1918. For all other calls, the number is 912-265-2500. That's 912-265-2500. For a cassette tape of this week's broadcast, send $5 to Sid Roth, Post Office Box 1918, Brunswick, Georgia, 31521. To see our television show, It's Supernatural, and to listen to our past radio programs, look us up on the web at www.sidroth.org. That's www.sidroth.org.